You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello and welcome to the William Hill Racing Podcast. Alex Dunn here with Rory DeLaghi to look ahead to the best of Monday's racing. Got action at Ripon to look forward to, as well as two races at Windsor and one at Carlisle. We'll get to that in just a moment. But plenty to talk about in the meantime. Firstly, hello Mr. DeLaghi, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks.
Good to hear. We've had a bit of a treat this week, haven't we, with Glorious Goodwood across Galway. At the same time, some decent supporting cards as well, if you like. Hasn't been a bad week, has it?
It hasn't been a bad week, and Goodwood did its best to be glorious as often as possible. I know we're in a sort of post-Glorious Goodwood era, but I think it was always an unofficial term, and it will continue despite the fact that it's now the Qatar Goodwood Festival.
Yes, officially. We'll have just a quick look back on Saturday's racing. The Nassau went to Legatissimo, a filly who hasn't really done a great deal wrong this year, and in hindsight looked blatantly obvious that she was going to win that, but hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it?
Hindsight is indeed a wonderful thing. But yeah, she arrived in the Nassau at a very backable price, having won a classic and finished a rather unlucky second in a classic over a trip that probably is her maximum. She looked all over the winner in the Oaks and was done in the final stride, and she was very impressive winning the 1,000 guineas. So she had very, very strong claims. I think that the worry was that she'd had a very busy time, and you don't know whether these fillies are always going to thrive in the racing, or whether there comes a point where you've gone to the well once too often. That was probably the biggest worry for her yesterday. But despite not particularly taking the eye of Ken Pitterson in the paddock pre-race, she brought her A game to the table and broke my heart again with Wedding Vow in the same colours chasing her home, although obviously different stables. Aidan O'Brien, the trainer of Wedding Vow, and David Watchman getting all the plaudits for Legatissimo, who's done in pride this season.
Indeed. The Stewards' Cup went to Magical Memory, who won, I'd like to say, quite nicely, but in doing so broke both your and my heart with Toofy, who ran a cracker in defeat.
Toofy did run a cracker. It was one of those, it very much felt like one that got away, to be honest. All credit to the winner, who's clearly very progressive as a sprinter and will be campaigned in pattern class from here on in. For a three-year-old to make the cut in the Stewards' Cup is remarkable enough these days, and to win it is a rare thing. Daintime did so in 1997, and we've had quite a long wait, 18 years, for another three-year-old to win it, and arguably did it with a little bit up his sleeve. But I can't help feeling that Toofy had a moment mid-race where William Buick wanted to explore the far rail, which to my eyes was needless. But then again, you know, I'm a losing punter in this, so that tends to be the way we go. But yeah, it's one of the everyone seemed to tip up Toofy yesterday. I'm glad in a way that that I'd decided a week or so in advance that this was a long-term plan. And I backed him accordingly. I would be much happier if he'd won, but I did at least get the fancy prices for once. Normally, in that situation, you work out that you fancy one, you go to take the price, and you find out it's collapsed because two or three other influential people have got there before you.
Well backed yesterday as well. But okay, what about jockeys then? Franca Di Torri ran away with the jockey's title, or not the title, but the Goodwood Award, if you like. He's just, his transformation in the last 18 months or so has just been, I don't think he could have dreamt it in his wildest dreams, could he?
No, Frankie has always been about confidence, and I remember him arriving on the scene as a 15 or 16 year old. He did actually ride a fair number of winners in Italy before he came here, But he rocked up. He turned up on John Gosden's doorstep, didn't he, as a cocky teenager with a limited grasp of the English language. And he's become one of the biggest characters in the game. I know there's always a debate about Frankie's had his ups and downs, and do you always want to be lionising people with a slightly checkered history? But, I mean, he is what he is. He wears his heart on his sleeve. He has made mistakes in his time. He has had low points in his career where he struggled. And it looked like 2-3 years ago, you thought, he just can't keep going on like this. He essentially lost the Godolphin job. He seemed to be losing support in the industry. And he's gone back to square one, really, back to John Gosden. And all of a sudden, in the last 6 months or so, he's got all his old confidence back. He really believes in himself again. And that comes through in his riding. There's no other jockey, I know we'll be talking about Richard Hughes, who's similar in that regard, no other jockey who is so dependent on confidence. Mm. We've been looking at jockeys like Tony McCoy, who is just the opposite. A man who's constantly driven every day to do the same thing. It's just about getting that winner, and it's almost an automatic thing. It's just a case of churning it out. With someone like Frankie Dettori, it's all about enjoyment of the game. It's about feeling that you can do it. And when he doesn't feel like he can do it, he can ride poorly. When he believes in himself, he can look absolutely fantastic, and he's looked fantastic this week.
He has. You mentioned Richard Hughes there. Of course, he retired on Saturday.
Hughes' career has been very interesting. Of course, he has in his time ridden the winner of an Irish champion hurdle. And there was a time when it looked like his career would be over very early because he struggled badly to do the weight. He then, by his own admission, fell into alcoholism.
Yep.
And everything could have gone horribly wrong. At a time when he should have been at his peak, he had one of the best jobs in racing. He was retained jockey to Khaled Abdullah. Who's very loyal, but he was struggling badly personally at the time, and it looked like the wheels were going to fall off. And he's managed to kick the habit, to get himself back on the straight and narrow. His teaming up with Richard Hannon has been his salvation. Mm-hmm. I think it's fair to use that word as well. And he has ridden, particularly at Goodwood, a host of good winners. He still is Marmite. To a lot of punters, you know. Yeah. When it comes to emails about jockeys who frustrate punters, Hughesy's always top three. I would say you can throw Jamie Spencer and Hayley Turner into the mix there as well.
But the comparison with Spencer there, say, they're both very similar in that, again, it's maybe not about winning all the time. It's more about the experience that they can put on a horse.
The pair of them are probably very psychologically complicated as well. Mm-hmm. And therefore, riding winners is not just about doing a job for most people. Every now and again it is. Mm-hmm. For some it's about proving yourself, it's about solving a puzzle, it's about doing it in a way that gives you maximum satisfaction. For Jamie Spencer and Richard Hughes, that's the case. For punters, if you back a horse, you want to see an uncomplicated ride, you want to see your chance being maximised. And I think sometimes with those two, they want to do it in a finessed way that sometimes doesn't work. Mm. And that can lead to punters, you know, throwing pens at TVs.
But at the same time, you'll see Spencer stereotypically running on late to nab a place.
Yeah.
Hughes, on the other hand, personally, I struggle to back each way.
Yeah.
Because I know that once the chance to win has gone.
Yes.
There's every chance he'll slip to fourth or fifth.
He's not unique in that regard, but yes, he's probably been the biggest culprit as far as that is concerned. And if you go back into the past, one of my favourite jockeys of all time was Pat Edrie, but Pat was a terrible one for dropping his hands when he was beaten. And that's always an issue for punters. It's less of an issue for owners and trainers. I mean, you know, for an owner who might pick up 200 quid for fourth or nothing for fifth, they're not really worried about the 200 quid in a game that they're paying for anyway. And they're more concerned about looking after the horse for next time. But for punters, that's of no real concern. They want to have their chance maximised, and that's why jockeys of the Hughesy ilk will always they'll always cause a barrage of emails in the scenarios where things don't go right. But that's the way of things. We've always had that in the sport, and we always will have. And we'd need people like, and it's a slightly bizarre thing to say, we need people with the character of Richard Hughes and Jamie Spencer in the game to give it that sort of wider appeal. Mm. For all they will, you know, prove Marmite characters, and some will love and some will hate them. And
but when they get it right,
when they get it right, it's
we saw Hughes on Beaver Bay, wasn't it, this week? Just you're watching the race and you're just thinking, when's he going to push the button? When he doesn't, it looks so fantastic. But again, some people would rather he was, you know, in the clear and winning by 10 lengths.
Yeah, but then again, you know, if you start watching racing from a purely non-financial aspect, you want it to be thrilling, you want it to capture the imagination, and therefore you do need that as well.
Yes.
You know, in an ideal world for punters, it would all be about going in straight lines and trying to conserve your energy perfectly every time. But actually, that's a little bit dull.
Yeah. And hard to do on a horse when there's 10 other horses around you with minds of their own.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, we'll move on to... just very quickly, standouts from Goodwood. If I was to give you one ride or one moment or one horse even from the glorious Goodwood Festival, what would you say was the highlight of the week, if you could?
It's a difficult one because there are plenty of them in the week. I suppose, and it always comes in for different reasons, I think Adam Kirby winning on Mount Logan was a moment that's... doesn't necessarily sum Goodwood up, but I thought it was a very interesting moment given that he had been controversially jocked off the winner of the King George, but here he was riding in a handicap that Luca Comani has farmed over the years, more so 20 years ago than now. But for him to get that kind of justification and give Mount Logan a really good ride to win on the... Was it the first day of the meeting? Was it the first race?
Second day.
First race on the second day of the meeting.
Yeah.
So that was some kind of justification for Adam Kirby. So that's an abiding memory. Solo obviously was the class act of the entire week, I think.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that race lost a little bit of his intrigue, but he's an obvious one, but a little too obvious.
Yeah. Fair enough. Okay. Right, we'll move on to Monday's racing then. As Mondays go, we've seen worse ones, Rory. I think it's fair to say. We've got Nottingham and Ripon in the afternoon. Carlisle and Windsor in the evening. Cork and Naas, the cards over the Irish Sea. Interesting card at Carlisle as well, isn't it? Women-only jockeys have it once a year now. It's become an annual thing. And it's interesting, if nothing else, isn't it?
It is. And it's one of those, again, I think there'll be a lot of people who think it's a brilliant idea and a lot of people think it's a load of old nonsense. I think it's always an interesting meeting because you get a different set of races. You get higher weights generally in the races because you get a mix of amateur and professional jockeys. Therefore, the sort of standard weight you have to carry would need to change. And it's always interesting to work out which horses that might have a negative effect on or vice versa. So it's a slightly different puzzle. I don't think it actually benefits women in the sport. Which is theoretically the idea.
I know what you mean by that, yeah.
Because what you're doing is you're making them a special case.
Yeah.
And actually, what benefits women in the sport is not making them a special case, is allowing them to compete on equal terms. But that's an entirely different political argument, and I don't want to get into it.
At the same time, would you say that the overall standard of women's riding and chances, opportunities, are increasing? I mean, I'm looking at one of the races that we're going to look at in just a moment, and you're looking through all the jockeys, and you're not really spotting a weak link, in inverted commas, that maybe you would have done a few years ago.
Yeah, you know, if you had this same idea 15 years ago, then you would have some fairly ropey riding, I would say.
You could almost rule...
You could rule
not half
out.
The field out, but a proportion of the field, just on the grounds of...
There are a fair number now of very capable female jockeys. There's always been a few, but now the numbers are quite large. And I'm not suggesting... It always seems to get people riled up when you compare women to men. Basically, jockeys are jockeys. You know, they may be male, they may be female. In all other aspects of equine sport, women do extremely well. There's no reason why they shouldn't make jockeys, but you do have this old throwback to the old days. It's still difficult for women to continue to make an impact over a long time, and that's something that still needs to be dealt with both within the sport and I guess individually for those women concerned. You get Amy Ryan has four rides tomorrow night, for example. But she's had 15 rides this year. And you know, a couple of years ago, people would say, I know she's riding for her dad, but she's a very stylish jockey and she gets the job done and she's as good as anyone there is out there. But Amy's fundamentally retiring herself from the sport, isn't she? Mm. And I'm not criticising her for that, but that tends to be reasonably typical, that talented women are more likely to drop out of the sport than talented men. Mm. And there are various reasons for that. And, you know, it'll be nice to see more women continue to progress through the ranks.
Yeah, no, certainly an interesting point, and should be interesting to see how they all get on at Carlisle on Monday evening. But we're going to start at Ripon with the 4:15 to handicap over 5 furlongs, 8 runners down to go to post. And some fairly informed types arrive here, Rory. It doesn't look the easiest race to start with.
No, there appear to be no easy races at Ripon, generally. And certainly not on Monday's card. But this 5 furlong handicap is interesting because there aren't that many who have everything in their favour. The going is liable to be just on the soft side of good. There's not a lot of rain around the country tomorrow, and the official going is good to soft. I think it'll be on the good side of that, so rather dead ground, and that doesn't rule too many out. But one or two. Can be questioned. Bosun Fred's one I like a lot in the race, but it's drawn in stall one and might just be gradually working his way into form. And Mick Easterby's, he had a winner the other day, but it's been poor for the yard for a little while. They will bounce back, and Bosun Fred's one to keep an eye on. Wasn't absolutely disgraced after a break at York last time. May still need this to get to his best, and is drawn in stall one, which is probably the worst of the draw. Of course, the stalls at Ripon are on the stand side.
Yeah.
So it's one of those tracks where the high number is next to the rail.
Every chance that he'll just be stuck in the middle and whatever he'll get into it.
He does have the speed to get away from that, but he hasn't been showing it in the early part of his races recently.
Yeah.
He gets struck off. David O'Mara's got a couple in the race, both of them in the same colours, both of them by Kodiak. But I think the reason to be against the pair of them, Miss Mulberry is a course and distance winner, but she's run poorly here this season. And although she wasn't absolutely disgraced, 2 starts to go over 6 furlongs, which is probably as far as she wants to go, but then was disappointing at York last time out, and you need to make excuses for that. And Snowcloud has run probably her worst race of the season at this track, so I'd want to be against her. She seems best on a flat track, and she's in stall 2. So I'm going to rule those two out. 2 that are of interest are Olivia Fallow, Paul Midgley's filly, who's been running really well of late. She was a winner at Chester 2 starts ago, and then a very good 4th in a competitive race at York behind Thesme. That's solid form, and she will definitely be winning races off her current mark. Slight worry with her is that she's been out the back early and finishing strongly in those races, and that's not easy to do at Ripon. You tend to need to get rolling a little bit on the undulations of this track, and she might just be finishing fast but a little late. Whereas Foxtrot Knight is a 5 furlong horse through and through. He won well at Windsor back in June. The horse he beat, Cartmel Cleave, won again at Newmarket last night, and that form is solid. He's been beaten twice, only 4th at Chelmsford and Carlisle in his next 2 starts, which, if you just look at that as it stands, you think, well, there you go, the handicapper's got him up £6 for that win and has made no impact since. But actually, both occasions, he's run into traffic problems. So I think he's a fair bit better than the result. Ruth Carr's horses, again, running well, and Foxtrot Knight should manage to avoid trouble in this field, and I think he's the likeliest winner as a result.
OK, so Foxtrot Knight, the pick in the 4:15 from Ripon. We'll move to Windsor for the 7 o'clock, a handicap over the extended mile trip, 8 runners down to go to post, and some interesting types. We'll start with the unexposed American Artist here, Rory.
Yeah, American Artist comes from a yard that's doing very well at the moment, Roger Varian. He had some 2 or 3 winners yesterday, I think, and that's been the sort of pattern with him, because the Varian yard is a powerful yard, but things weren't right with the yard as a rule in the spring. And a lot of his 3-year-olds have been very lightly raced as a result. So while everyone else is campaigning their horses and their handicap marks are, if they're capable of winning handicaps, they're rising in the weights. His have been sitting there doing nothing and starting off from a lower base. Mm-hmm. So a lot of them are potentially well handicapped and are winning races and winning races well at the moment as well. An American Artist was another one to get off the mark in handicaps last time, scoring at Sandown, where he beats Sonitation, who reopposes. I got a slight concern about that. In that it was his third handicap start, being well beaten in the first two, and he did get the run of things at Sandown. It may well have been a proper improvement. Strictly on form terms, it wasn't. He only really ran to the same level as when winning his maiden last year. He may have stepped forward again. The handicapper hasn't been harsh with him, only up £3, and it could be that he's now finding his feet at a time when a lot of the others in the yard are doing so. You've got to respect his chances. I get the impression with the form that the Varian Yard's in and the fact that he's won a handicap and gone up a small amount in the weights, he'd be very popular. I think he'd be a very short price.
Okay.
So I respect his chances, but I think he might end up being, as they say in the trade, well found in the market.
So value against him?
Value against him, I hope. And the horse to back against him is one who's gone up a lot in the weights, and therefore a lot of people will think, well, you know, the handicapper may well have got, and that's Bakhtar Rawan, who won his first handicap off a mark of 55, and he'd been beaten a couple of times prior to that, but seemed to benefit from the drop to a mile when winning a competitive race of its type at Nottingham two starts ago, clearing right away. And I think at the time a few people thought he was unfancied for that race, thought again he maybe was ideally suited by the run of the race and was flattered by it, but he absolutely bolted up in what wasn't a very competitive race at Epsom next time out. Again, wasn't even sent off favourite for a moderate race, beating Vale of Iron, but he did that very easily, completely backed up what he'd done at Nottingham. And although it was a small field, he put up a very, very good time. And I think he's just, like a lot of three-year-olds, he's just suddenly found his feet. So that mark of 55 was wrong. He's up to 70 now, which makes life a lot tougher. But he gave the impression, both at Nottingham and particularly at Epsom, that he's a horse who's a fair way ahead of his mark. So with American Artist hopefully cornering the market and one or two fancy yards represented here, the fact that Bakhtar Rawan is trained by Mark Usher, whose horses tend to be allowed to go off at biggish prices, I think Bakhtar Rawan looks a really solid each-way bet in this race. Again, it's not a great... There are eight runners. If they all go to post, I think it's a cracking bet, although, you know, we tend to expect these days that eight runner decks tend to be whittled down to seven come the off, but certainly at the prices I expect him to go off, he looks a bet to me.
Okay, we'll move to the 7:30 from Windsor, a handicap over 6 furlongs, 11 runners out and got to post in this one, and we'll start with Aldea here, Richard Hannan, who does so well at Windsor normally with Richard Hughes, but it's Frankie Dettori on board here. Frankie, Connections, Richard Hannan all had a very good Goodwood and coming here in flying form. How do you rate this one's chances?
Well, this is... I'll boil this down to two straight away, which is dangerous to do, it has to be said. But both Aldea and Hope and Faith have just had a couple of runs, winning a maiden between them. But the pair of them on collateral form look to be potentially well in. Aldea won a 7-furlong maiden at Salisbury last time out. Despite showing signs of temperament, she flashed her tail repeatedly through the race, which is sometimes a negative, but there are certain, particularly with fillies, there are a lot of them who just do it all the time and it doesn't seem to affect them. She certainly went forward all right that day. She won by a decent margin from a horse of Roger Varian's called Almotaseb. Now, Almotaseb has come out and won a maiden since and is now rated... I think Almotaseb is rated 90.
Okay.
So Aldea, who beat Almotaseb, was rated 85.
Well, at Doncaster, didn't it?
Yeah. So that form looks very solid. It's only a maiden anyway. He didn't win a handicap off that mark. He won a maiden, but the handicapper has given him a big rating on the back of it. Now, the question is whether you saw the best of Almotaseb that day. For me, I don't think you did. He was dropped back to 7 furlongs. He got in a little bit of traffic problems and ran on late. But Aldea had built up a big lead by that stage. So it's slightly dangerous to assume that Aldea was a good 2.5 lengths better than the runner-up that day. But even so, a mark of 85 is not at all harsh. The time figure that she put up that day was good. The question is whether she can dominate this field back in trip. It's not beyond the realms of possibility because she was clear with 3 furlongs to run at Salisbury over 7 furlongs, so she's clearly got plenty of speed. But that was in a maiden race, of course, where she was able to boss her rivals. She's now running in a handicap against maybe, on the whole, a slightly better class of horse. And there is the possibility that with her tail flashing, she might resent being taken on for the lead, which she may well be here. Because Hope and Faith is another one who impressed in winning its maiden. She was impressive first time out at Doncaster before finishing sixth behind the highly rated Scalzo at Haydock. A lot of people will remember that race. Scalzo absolutely hosed up. And Hope and Faith was held up at the back of the field by Jamie Spencer. Getting back to jockeys that everyone loves or hates. Despite making all the running on debut, was held up towards the back of the field and couldn't get into the race. Haydock's a really funny track like that. I think Scalzo was a little bit flattered by the winning margin. Often you get strange results there, or strange margins at least at Haydock, because of unevenness in the going. And I think Hope and Faith wasn't seen to anything like best effect there. The form of her Doncaster maiden win has worked out well. The horse that was way back in seventh is a rating in the 70s now. The filly she beat was then second in a maiden at Lingfield next time. It hasn't been seen since, but the third, Paint the Star, was also third in that maiden. So that sort of backed the form up. Mm-hmm. And Paint the Star has now rated 80 as well. So Hope and Faith beat Paint the Star fairly easily and has only rated 80 herself. So again, based on what those that she beats have done since, she looks well treated off 80. And I think you can generally ignore Haydock form. Any horse that runs poorly at Haydock and that's the only bad run on its card, I think just put a line through it.
Okay.
I expect her to be ridden more prominently. James Doyle takes over from Jimmy Spencer, and she has plenty to recommend her. Those two really should dominate. They look a cut above the rest, with plenty of improvement to come from them.
Okay, folks, going to pin you down for one?
I would go for Hope and Faith.
Okay, Jeremy Nasida's charge then in the 7:30. And the final race we're going to look at is the 8:15 from Carlisle. It is a Pro-Am Lady Riders race over almost a mile, just shy of. Eight runners down to go to post here. Where should we start with this one, Rory?
Let's start near the top. I will pass over Mujizif, which is a slightly dangerous thing to do, given that he shaped a little bit better last time, but he's been disappointing for a while. The going again at Carlisle is soft at the moment, probably getting a little quicker. So again, it'll be good to soft all round at that stage. Gambino is of interest. Disappointing here last time over course and distance when well fancied, but started very slowly that day. The issue with Gambino is that he can start slowly. He does it, you know, every other run, essentially.
Yeah, inconsistent.
But he was very bad last time in that he started slowly and then took time to find stride as well and was in a very bad position early on, only finishing sixth. If he's able to make up any ground loss at the start reasonably quickly, if there's not a frenetic pace on, then he's got a very good chance on his previous form. His second over course and distance prior to that looks solid. He's probably best on ground no worse than good to soft, but I think that's probably what it's going to be like. On that, he was second in the Carlisle Bell Consolation race, which is very solid form. Go Dan Go, the winner, has been hugely progressive this year. And Strongman, who was third, came out and won next time as well. So that form looks very good. And if Gambino can repeat it, then he must go very close here.
Okay. Gambino the pick?
Gambino would be the pick. I'll also give a mention to True Pleasure. Amy Ryan riding. Mm-hmm. We had a quick mention of Amy earlier on. Her minimum weight these days is probably 9.5 stone plus, which is why she doesn't ride an awful lot. She's had 15 rides this season, two winners, but the conditions of tomorrow's races give her an opportunity to ride several times. And True Pleasure is a course and distance winner who handles ease in the ground, and wasn't completely disgraced when fourth behind Wee Jean at Chester last time in a better race than this. So she's not really fired in all cylinders this season, True Pleasure, but she's a course and distance winner who could bounce back.
Okay. So Gambino the pick, True Pleasure the danger in Carlisle's 8:15. Great stuff, Rory. Pleasure talking to you, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Thank you very much.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.